The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Seth Greenberg, top basketball analyst at ESPN College Hoops on Bobby Hurley. I want to do a deep dive today on Arizona State basketball. I love where Bobby is with the program. I came over here in 1994 from Southern California, and the holdup for me to take the gig was Arizona State basketball. I told management at KTAR, I said, I'm not coming unless I'm the analyst. And they said, why would anybody want to be around Arizona State basketball? I said, because it's college hoops. It's great. And everything here was about the Suns back in the day, and I was doing the Suns too, but I held out. Finally, Tom Dillon, the late, great Tom Dillon, and I sat together, and we did games around Arizona State hoops. And since then, I just love the college and the scene there. And I think Bobby's gotten overlooked here in the sports market. He's off to a good start. Struggled against Villanova. Big game this Thursday night against San Diego State. And I'm very excited. Grand Canyon and ASU finally are getting together. This is great for the community. This is great for college basketball. And that is this coming Sunday. Seth Greenberg, I'm Bobby Hurley, trying to turn around what, in my opinion, is a really hard job at Arizona State Hoops. And the job that he's done to this point, that comes up at 10:20. For the fantasy football fans, there's a lot of you. Michael Fabiano. Michael and Sandy Charles get together on the Fantasy Football Focus. That comes up at 10:45. Of course, Michael with SiriusXM, none better than Michael Fabiano. That's all straight ahead. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. Desert Financial Credit Union across the valley and before you know it, across the state. We appreciate their support. I want to start with the Cardinals. So they're a 2.5-point road favorite. Where's this coming from? What are the wise guys in Vegas thinking? I got to go get Jimmy Vaccaro and put him on the air. I say, Jimmy, at South Point, you've got them listed as a 2.5-point favorite after the showing that we've witnessed here over the last 5 weeks where they won once, and it was a DeAndre Hopkins miracle catch. So a road favorite, is it because there's Kyler Murray? And the last 2 weeks, he's been figured out by good defensive schemes. Was it Bill Belichick getting tape, Cardinals, Patriots week before? And last week, Sean McVay said, oh, I think I'm going to do the exact same thing, and I'm going to wedge in on Kyler Murray. Or, as it the whispers have been, that Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins clearly are not on the same page. We saw some moments during the broadcast on Sunday's game where they weren't happy. I'm hearing behind the scenes it's not good. And this is where Cliff Kingsbury has got to get involved and try and figure it out. This offense was not good in any way, any shape, any form. If you're the number one scoring offense in the NFL, which they were coming into the game, and you have less than 250 yards in total offense against the Rams. So you're going to New York against the Giants. It's an 11 a.m. kick. We know that 11 a.m. East Coast or West Coast start times are hard on body clocks. And so are the Cardinals going to be ready to go? The Giants are sitting there playing, what is it, Colt McCoy and Daniel Jones at quarterback, and Daniel reportedly is going to be back for game time. We sit here on Tuesday. That's the word on the quarterback. So if you're putting the money down on this game, why are the Cardinals a road favorite after putting up such a poor showing, not just last week, but I'd say over the last month? We'll talk about that as the show moves on. Arizona State is an 11-point favorite in Tucson on Friday night's game, and I think that's too low. I mean, the total is 50, and I'm thinking they're going to be north of that because the Wildcats, with Kevin Sumlin, they look like they've quit. They look like they've rolled on the ground. They're scratching fleas. They're looking like a dog, and they can't afford to buy out Kevin Sumlin at $7.5 million. U of A has lost, what is it, 11 straight games. So they are stuck. And yeah, I know it's odd, it's weird, it's all the above about Arizona State U of A playing, but they're still playing. It's a Friday night 5 p.m. kick in Tucson. There's going to be nobody in the stands, but from what I was told before the season started, even if fans were allowed, no one was going to show up in Tucson. Less than 9,500 season ticket holders for U of A football. They don't care. And so if you're Herm Edwards, yeah, you got to figure things out, but the Wildcat run defense, awful, with a capital A. They gave up over 400 yards rushing to Colorado last week. So here are the Sun Devils in a space where really the pressure, I think, it's on Kevin Sumlin to win the game, to save his job, and even then, I don't know if he's saved. On the other side of the street, if you're an Arizona State fan, You got to win this game, right? You've won three in a row over the Wildcats. They're not good. They stink. And so the number says 50 is a total, 11 is the spread. I'm looking at that and saying, that's probably too low. Ohio State, Michigan is this week. You've got the baseball winter meetings going on right now. Are the Diamondbacks going to do anything? I was on a Zoom last night where Chris Paul was talking about where he is with the Suns. I'm really excited for the Suns. I think they're better than 38 wins, and that's what they've been listed at in Vegas. James Harden didn't report to Houston. He wants to be traded to Brooklyn. James Harden, the last 3 years, led the NBA in scoring. How many titles does he have? Not banging on James Harden. It's just a fact. You want to go chase a title? Go chase it. All right? Some of what is on my mind in the world of sports brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union taking care of you, taking care of your business. Seth Greenberg, top analyst, ESPN College Hoops, on Bobby Hurley and Arizona State basketball. He zooms in with me. That's next. As promised, now, let's do a deep dive into what Bobby Hurley is doing in making Arizona State basketball a place that I've not seen. A true story, I came here in 1993, and the holdout was, I'm leaving Southern California, and I said, I want Arizona State basketball. I want to be Bill Frieder's color analyst. And they looked at me sideways and said, nobody cares about Arizona State basketball. Well, I cared. And so I did games with Frieder, and then the contracts moved on. And now, as time has evolved, I've seen this thing through the point shaving, through all these coaches. And Bobby Hurley, I think, has them right here. So what is it from a national view that he's doing? And could they see this coming? And Seth Greenberg is someone that I've covered and seen all the way back to his days at Long Beach State. Of course, ESPN college basketball analyst, at Seth on Hoops on Twitter. His podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dakich, is must listen if you can get through Dan's nonsense with Seth. Seth zooms on in for a couple of minutes. Good to see you, Coach, and appreciate
good
your time.
Good to see you, my friend.
What do you make out of, let's just start first, of Bobby Hurley as a basketball coach? Could you see this coming way back in the day?
Yeah, I can, because it's his pedigree. I mean, if you look at his pedigree, forget about what he did at Duke. Think about what his dad has been able to do. Think about what Danny's doing. He grew up around it. He understood the difference between enabling players and coaching players. He understood the idea of setting an expectation and creating a vision. His dad, I say it all the time, and I recruited players that played for his dad unsuccessfully. Unfortunately, that's why I'm talking to you, is ran the best practices I've ever seen. He was demanding. He knew exactly who they were and how they won. He connected with players. He was a special, special guy. Well, he grew up in that environment. I mean, that was part of it. That is part of his DNA. To be able to be coached by his dad, to be able to be coached by Kay, to be able to have that incredible and competitive spirit. You know, you could see that Bobby was going to be a very good coach. Now, you know, obviously he's fiercely competitive. That works for him and it works against him at times. Mm-hmm. But in terms of when you're rebuilding a program, when you're trying to create energy, when you're trying to get ownership, when you're trying to get players to believe in a vision, those traits are really, really important. So when I looked at Bobby, and even when I look at Danny now, who I'm very close with, you know, because he's here right here at Connecticut, you know, I see guys that were born to coach. I've seen guys that grew up in the business, whether it was his dad being a Hall of Fame high school coach, makes no difference. He's a world-class coach who understood work ethic and attitude and commitment and caring and earning trust and developing relationships. You know, that's what, you know, Bobby's been able to do, you know, in Arizona. He's been able to, you know, recruit guys, get guys to play hard and play a style of play that people enjoy watching.
How about this idea that we're seeing him grow and evolve? I had his father on. I have his father on usually about once a year. And he said, after the second season, said, Brad, Bobby has not even coached 100 games yet. So the demeanor that you talked about, he said it works against him. The dad kept saying he just needs more games under his belt. He'll finally get through that. Are you seeing that evolution? And is that something that you do have to get 100 games, 150 games, 200 games? Because he came here from Buffalo without that much experience, Seth, as a head guy.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. Typical, as I call him, the real Coach Hurley, putting it very succinctly, like, you know, here's an issue. You know, Bobby's a fighter. Bob tried to create a cause. He has an edge. That's what made him a great player. So when he first started coaching, you know, everything can't be the most important thing. Every call can't be the most important call.
Yeah.
And yet he was living it in the moment. So in that moment in time, that was the most important call. So, you know, he was wearing on officially. He's wearing on his players. And I think what he's done, and you evolve. I look at my first year as head coach at Long Beach State, and I was not a good head coach. And I prepared to become a coach. I was an assistant coach in a number of different programs. I was Joe Harrington's right hand. I recruited all those players. We had success. But when you move over, it's different. And you've got to kind of be comfortable in your own skin. And you've got to kind of what I call settling in as a head coach. And it took him time to settle in. He's developed an identity, which is really important for their program. See, it's two things you got to develop, identity and culture. Identity is immediate. And when he came in, he instantly developed an identity of how they wanted to play. Now, they weren't good at it, but they wanted to play a certain way. And then what you do is through time, you develop your culture, because your culture takes time, because it's not just you. It's your locker room. So you need to develop a culture. You need to know who's coaching your locker room when you're not there. You know, who's the guy that's going to basically be a reflection of your philosophy, your beliefs, your, you know, when you have a bad practice, say, and coaches, you know, Bobby's really, really hard on him. Who's going to go in the locker room like Remy Martin could do right now and say, you know what, he's right. You know, Villanova, we didn't share the ball. We didn't move the ball. We weren't competitive enough. He said, coach has a reason to be ticked off at us because, you know what, he set a standard. The standard's a standard, and we didn't fulfill that standard. So we got to look at ourselves, and he cares so much. That's why he challenged us today. Well, if you don't have that guy in your locker room, that hard practice, and you have the wrong guy in your locker room, that hard practice breaks you down. So that's why I say culture is not immediate. Culture takes time. You've got to have players in your program that have been in your program that understand what you're trying to get across to them. So it all takes time. Everyone wants, you know, they want a quicker phone. They want a quicker computer. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and I equate this to the Titanic. I mean, this job has not ever been an easy job. It's a mirage, or was a mirage. And I think where Bobby is now, when I see Seth, he's been able to overcome the facility is old and aging. Well, we always get the short end of the schedule because U of A gets the easy ins and outs on a Saturday afternoon rather than a Sunday night in Pullman, and all this stuff that you've heard through coaches through the years. So it feels like the street cred that he's brought here is just grown into this program is no longer a, well, it's a nice job, and if you're 16 and 14, it's a great season.
Yeah, well, that's not Bobby anyway. I mean, he's not going to live with that. You know, he's going to be fiercely competitive. He wants to win championship, whether he's at Buffalo or whether he's at Arizona State. I mean, that's just the way he is. I mean, he's won championships. He's lost championships. He's won state championships. He's won national championships. You know, he's won a, I mean, you think about his journey. I mean, think about everything he's been through.
Right,
he survived a brutal car accident. He's competitive. He's a fighter. He's got a plan. And he's got a plan because he saw it work with Danny in Wagner. He saw it work with Danny in Rhode Island. He saw it work in Buffalo with himself. And he saw it work with his dad for years and years and years. So when you know that here's a game plan, I just need to execute it, but it has to take time. The one thing he didn't have is he didn't have patience, but he's developing into that. You know, you grow into that. I mean, that's just the way it is. And he's recruiting players, and you know, having assistant coaches that understand the players that can play for you. Like, don't recruit any soft dudes, because you know, like a soft guy's not going to survive him. A soft guy's not going to survive John Calipari. A soft guy's not going to survive Tom Izzo. That's just the way it is. If you don't get lost in the game, if you don't get lost in winning, if you don't get lost in being a great teammate, if you're not fiercely competitive, if you don't want to get better, Arizona State's probably not a good place for you. That's just the way it is. Now, he's in a situation now, he's got a pretty talented team. He's got to figure out a way, as talented as these guys are, to trust each other more. Like, I didn't think that, you know, for example, to Christopher Kidd, I don't think he trusted his teammates against Villanova. You know, and I thought Remy Martin got disgusted with him, you know, in watching that game a little bit, because here's a guy that has invested in winning and has helped build a program. But that takes time when you add pieces. You know, these high school kids come in, and because of the way things are right now, they're unrealistic. They think it's easy. And they think that, you know, look, everyone gets recruited hard and everyone gets told the story of, hey, you know, we're going to help you be a great player. We're going to help you be one and done. We're going to do that, whatever you want, you know. And that's not real unrealistic. It's not a bad dream. Then once you step on campus, that transition from high school to college is a bitch. Learning how to play hard, having understanding the other team has good players, understanding the other team has a scouting report that's going to decide what it's going to give and what it's going to take away. And it's going to take away what you do well. So all that takes time. But the key is putting good recruiting classes on top of each other and getting the right type of kids that understand Bobby's passion and his vision and are not afraid to work. And that's what they're doing.
Before I get you out of here, a couple other questions for you, Seth, and I appreciate your time. At Seth on Hoops on Twitter, Seth Greenberg, ESPN college basketball analyst. The belief has been, well, when Krzyzewski hangs it up, Bobby's just sitting over here in Tempe waiting and that he'll move right in. I don't think it's that simple. Bobby doesn't strike me as just a, yeah, I'm going to sit here and park myself guy. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't see, you know, who knows? I mean, you never know. First of all, who wants to follow K? I mean, really, who wants to follow K? That's number one. You know, they say that in Arizona, and they say that in Milwaukee with Woj, and they say that in Chicago with Collins, and, you know, they say that in Boston with Amaker. You know, everyone has that same paranoia. You know, if it happens, maybe it will, maybe it won't. But, like, there's no guarantee. Look, his family likes living out there. I think just the hardest thing for him is being so far away from you know, Danny and his dad and his mom. But, you know, just in talking with him, they love the quality of life out there. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said, you know, for the quality of life. And building something in his own image. Like you said, Arizona State hasn't been able to sustain. Like Herb Sendick did a very good job. He wasn't sexy enough for the Arizona State community. I mean, he won games. I mean, he and I were in the bubble for 48 straight months together. I mean, I have great empathy for Herb, and I think Herb's a terrific guy and a terrific coach. But Danny's sexier. Now, Danny has a chance because of the lack of tradition because of what's going on in Arizona.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
To have to create his own niche. And look, Arizona's always going to be good, but if something happens in Arizona, now all of a sudden Arizona State even becomes bigger because the next guy coming in is going to have to – it'll take time to develop. But I don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, look, I think Sean's a great coach. I think he's a great coach. But, I mean, you know, we'll see what happens with the investigation.
Yeah, the rivalry between Bobby and Sean has been very good. It's been actually healthy, where this has been an unhealthy rivalry going way, way back to Steve Kerr's days. And I really – appreciate where it's going, but I think it's a fair point. There is the uncertainty with the level one in U of A to see where it goes. And Bobby just goes out and he does his thing.
He doesn't worry about it.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't. He doesn't.
That's the way he's been raised, though. But see, that goes back to his dad. Like, control your controllables.
Yep.
I mean, like, his dad's like, don't worry about Arizona. Come on, man, you got enough to worry about on your own plate. Like, and his dad didn't worry about St. Pat's. His dad didn't worry about the programs or people trying to steal his players or whatever. His dad just coached his team. Like, coach your team, man. Coach your team. Be the best version of yourself. You know, build the best program. If you spend any ounce of energy worrying about a competitor, that's energy you're taking away from your own program. And that's what he learned from his dad.
Last question. You're at ESPN and you see Arizona State. You've seen them a little bit so far this season. They have San Diego State here, a very good game on Thursday night. Crosstown rivalry, which I'm very pleased with Grand Canyon University and Bryce Drew. Let's get that going. Let's have the game that's 8 miles apart for fans to be interested in. What is the big view of where ASU is this year in this season? Very young roster, but you've got Remy, as you mentioned. What's the view of nationally on where ASU is?
I think the big question will be, I think nationally is that with Remy and Christopher and Verge, that's correct pronunciation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I always had knee to it, but it's Verge.
Yeah.
They've got a dynamic perimeter game. And, you know, can they rebound the ball? The Verge is an NCAA tournament team. How deep can they go? How much, you know, Bagley, how good can he be? Mm-hmm. They're going to miss Romello White. Me nationally, I'm saying they miss Romello White. I mean, that's just the way it is.
It's a fact.
They miss rebounding. They miss the easy baskets he gets on the glass. They miss that you don't have to run a play for him, and he's going to compete. But they're an NCAA tournament team with good guard play. And this, especially this year, with the pandemic, with less practice, with kind of, in my sense, quite honestly, the inexperienced, really inexperienced teams, the Kentuckys and even the Dukes right now, they're just not going to be where they need to be. They're just not going to be there. It's just, it's too hard. The kids didn't have scrimmages. They didn't have exhibition games. They didn't have real workouts in the summer. They didn't get a chance to settle in. That because you have good guard play, because you have a guy like Ray Martin who could take over a game, or Verge, or even Christopher, who's developing, now all of a sudden, you've got a chance to have a really special season. I mean, you know, they're a dynamic, aggressive team. I think that they've got to do understand is they got to get better flow to what they're doing. They got to have better shot selection. If they can clean that up and have a little bit more trust in those perimeter guys, I mean, they're really good. And that, I think in the pack, I think they're good. I think Oregon, even though they lost that first game, I think Oregon's going to be really good. I think they're going to get Will Richardson back. The kid they got from Amori, the kid they got from Rutgers looks like a, just a dynamic player. They just got LJ Figueroa eligible. He's another shot maker. I mean, they're really, really good. UCLA is going to continue to get better. They got to get Johnny Juzang to transfer from Kentucky healthy. They're going to be good. Arizona State's going to be good. Colorado's going to be good. You know, again, Arizona, yeah, they got the three transfers. I think they're going to be competitive. The league's good. It's not great. Washington's down. Washington State's down. Utah's still a question mark, although I think he's a terrific, terrific coach. USC is talented, but I don't think they have the guard play. The Mobleys are terrific, and they've got legitimate front court players, but I don't think they have the guard play. So Arizona State's a team that should be in the NCAA tournament. And because of their guard play, the national perception is they're dangerous.
Really good stuff. And I appreciate all the time that you gave me on Bobby and the job that he's doing out here, Seth. Stay safe in the holidays. Thanks.
You too, Brad. Stay well.
There's Seth Greenberg. And you can follow Seth on Twitter and make sure that's at Seth on Hoops on Twitter. And his podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, it is must listen. It is a lot of fun. And we're back with more after this timeout. Thanks again to Seth Greenberg. He was great. We have Michael Fabiano and Sandy Charles here in a couple of minutes for the weekly fantasy football. If you're a fantasy football fan, we do this with Michael, who's the best in the business. There's no question about it. And Michael is with us every week. This is his sixth year that we've had fantasy football. We do gambling and gaming with Jimmy Vaccaro, one of the best in the business up at South Point. Jimmy's been in the business for 42 years. So we have a lot of fun. It's not brain surgery, it's sports, we like to say. And there's plenty of content up on our website, too, at sports360az.com. sports360az.com. Pro, college, high school makes no difference to me. It's just stuff that's local and Arizona-centric. So James Harden is becoming a story today. And I'm not here to bang on James Harden, but facts are facts, okay? Facts are... he's been in Houston. He was in Oklahoma City. He's moved a couple of times. Guys don't feel like they get the ball enough from him, if I'm to believe what I read and hear out of Houston or even in Oklahoma City. He's led the NBA in scoring the last 3 years. Now he's not shown up in Houston. Houston has gotten rid of Russell Westbrook. James has been partying in Atlanta and Las Vegas since training camp opened for the Rockets on Sunday. The reports this morning are, and this is coming from Woj, who, you know, how am I going to dispute Woj, that he does not want to be in Houston and is trying to get to either Brooklyn or the Philadelphia 76ers. So where there's smoke, there's fire. And if it's going to a team that he feels like gives him the best chance to win a title, players want to play in a position where they can win championships. I understand that. I don't necessarily like the trend. A guy like Devin Booker has sat here in Phoenix, and I've expected him at some point to sit in front of his locker and look up at the cameras and say, I don't want to be here anymore because all I'm doing is banging my head against the wall because we're doing nothing to get better. Well, the Suns have not been able to attract a free agent. That's a fact of star caliber. So they did what the only move they could make, and it was a smart move by James Jones, and that is go get Chris Paul. Some people don't like this deal because they gave up a lot. Well, you got to give up a lot to get a lot. And Chris Paul, I think, could attract free agents to Phoenix as long as the owner stays out of the way this year. I equate it to where James Harden is. If he's just trying to go win a championship and force his way out of Houston, I don't like that. Kind of like how Devin Booker has sat here through the 19 wins and the 24 wins and the incompetence the coach after coach and GM after GM and just the stuff that's been around a team that hasn't had one playoff game since 2010. And Devin's been here, not through all that, but so I respect that route rather than, hey, I just want to go win a title. It's like Steph Curry came out today and said, I want to sign a contract that'll keep me with the Warriors for the rest of my career. I respect that. Rather than Damian Lillard, I respect that. Rather than I'm going to force my way out of here because I just want to go win a championship. It's the easy way out. It's just easy. I want to go surround myself with better people rather than I'm the guy that can win a title. And so James Harden is in the radar. And one other note before we take a break. Just in the last 10 minutes, I know there's been the Coyote fans that want to see the hockey season get started. About the last 10 minutes, it's come out on Twitter from reputable corners that the NHL is now looking at a start date of January 13th, and it'd be a 56-game season. The Suns open preseason this coming Saturday night. Regular season is in a couple of weeks. A little bit of normalcy to get the NBA and NHL back on track? Yes. Are we there yet? No. We need the vaccine and mask up. We're back with Michael Fabiano and Sandy Charles after this timeout.
Hey, everyone. I'm Sandy Charles, and I'm joined by Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, week 14, we're going to look ahead. There is still one game for week 13, but we're looking ahead. And fantasy football playoffs, some leagues start this weekend. So first off the bat is Bills wide receiver Gabriel Davis, a must pickup after the few weeks he's had.
I mean, I don't know if he's a must add, but he's certainly worth a look if you need wide receiver help. The matchup upcoming for Buffalo isn't the most favorable in the world. They've got Pittsburgh. So is he worth an add? I mean, sure, probably in a 12-team league, maybe even in some 10-team leagues. But I don't know that he's a must add at this point, but he has been pretty good the last couple of games without John Brown. Maybe not better than Cole Beasley, who's been just, whew, you want to talk about one of the most underrated wide receivers in fantasy football. Cole Beasley, he used to play for my beloved Dallas Cowboys. I'm glad he's not playing for Dallas anymore, right? He's been very good.
Now, if running back Antonio Gibson can't play for the Washington football team, how are you handling their backfield?
Well, first off, that stinks because he's been great. Yeah. And that hurts a lot of fantasy fans out there. So what's going to happen in Washington if Gibson is out is that Peyton Barber's probably going to end up starting and be in the early down back. And then J.D. McKissic will continue to fill the role of the pass catcher. I would think McKissic would be more valuable. Alex Smith likes to drop the ball off to his receivers in the short and intermediate part of the field. Yeah. And McKissic is going to get targeted a bunch. So I think both players are startable. Peyton Barber maybe as a desperation flex if you're really hurting at the position without Gibson. But McKissic is the better fantasy option. The thing with McKissic, though, is that he's already owned in a lot of leagues. So Barber, if McKissic's out there, then get him. I just don't know that he will be. Barber is far more available in leagues.
Let's move on over to Denver. Is Broncos wide receiver Tim Patrick a must start?
Not a must start. And the matchup on paper, at least, isn't great this week against Carolina, but he's certainly rosterable. You know, he had a couple of touchdowns last week against Kansas City. He's been kind of like under the radar good. He's not great. He's not super reliable. Like, he's not putting up 15 a week, but he's had some good numbers over the last month plus. So certainly a guy that I would have on my roster and would play based on the matchups.
As always, I'm joined by Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, let's talk quarterback a little bit. Baker Mayfield, has he changed your perspective of him with his play the last few weeks?
He's been good. I mean, six touchdowns and no picks, right, in his last two games. Now, the matchups haven't been great.
Yeah.
Okay, let's not get things twisted here. He's got the Ravens this week, Monday night. I'm not playing them, okay? If I'm in a 2QB league, okay. But in a traditional redraft, I'm not playing him. And he's been very good lately. Let me see him do it against a good defense. And if he does it against Baltimore, I'll give him all the credit in the world. Is he rosterable? I think he is, but I wouldn't play him until week 16, and that assumes you get there because he's got Baltimore this week. Then he's got the Giants. The Giants defense is playing pretty good. And then he's got the Jets in week 16, and they stink, so.
So week 16, we're looking at.
Exactly, that's basically it in a traditional redraft league, yeah.
Now, which Titans receiver do you prefer, Corey Davis or A.J. Brown?
Definitely A.J. Brown. He's just a more talented guy. But Corey Davis, I loved him last week, and I love him this week. He got Jacksonville this week. They're terrible. So, yeah, Corey Davis has been, again, kind of like, you know, Cole Beasley, kind of under the radar good. He doesn't put up monster numbers typically. He had a huge game last week. But his floor has been decent. I mean, his floor has been, you know, 12, 13 points. So he's a very good start this week. But both of them are A.J. Brown's more of a must start than Corey Davis, but Davis has been pretty damn good. I mean, looking at the numbers after last week, Davis is legitimately within like a point of A.J. Brown in terms of their points per game average.
Now, last one, before we get to waiver wire, do you trust starting Colts running back Jonathan Taylor?
This week I do. In his last two games, now keep in mind he missed one of those games. He was on the COVID list.
Yeah.
He led the Colts backfield in snaps and touches. They got the Raiders this week. The Raiders, their defense, they made Ty Johnson look like Freeman McNeil, okay? That defense is terrible. So I do like Jonathan Taylor this week as a high RB2.
Now, waiver wires, let's start with quarterback. What are their needs?
Well, remember, most teams are already sort of set at quarterback. So I'm talking to people who – maybe desperate, right?
Yeah.
No more teams on a bye. So Kirk Cousins has had, 20 plus points in four of his last five. He's got the Bucs this week. It's not a great matchup on paper, but could be a shootout. You know, Baker is maybe an add and stash. Derek Carr's got the Colts this week, so he had a good game last week. I don't love him. He's a backup. Although Phillip Rivers has got the Raiders this week. That could be a streaming option. Teddy Bridgewater's got the Broncos. Jalen Hurts could be worth an add in deeper two QB leagues if Carson Wentz loses his starting job. But that's about it. Going into week 14, you're very much probably set at quarterback at this point.
I was going to ask you about Jalen Hurts, but I was like, kind of like what you said. Well, what's your takeaway from him after seeing him play and what are your thoughts?
He showed some flashes and he's a rookie quarterback. I mean, I know there's been rookie quarterbacks who have played very well this season. But the Eagles' offense overall is just terrible. I mean, it's been brutal outside of Dallas Goedert. Jeez Louise, everyone else has fallen off. So even if Hurts gets the job, like I'm talking about deep two QB super flex leagues, Hurts is not going to get added in traditional redrafts unless your starting quarterback is Carson Wentz, in which case you're not making the playoffs anyway. So
very true. Let's do running back. Waiver wire needs.
So Cam Akers, who we talked about last week, still available in a lot of leagues, had a 32% touch share last week. Darrell Henderson still had a decent stat line. The matchup's not great this week, or the matchup is good this week against New England. It's not great for, you know, the Jared Goffs of the world here. New England's been very tough on quarterbacks lately, but they can be had by running backs. And so Akers is on that flex starter radar. I don't know if DeAndre Swift is coming back this week. If he does, he's an obvious must start against Green Bay. But Adrian Peterson has had four touchdowns in his last two games. So suddenly, Peterson is on the radar as a flex if Swift is unable to go. I mentioned Ty Johnson. Frank Gore had a concussion. I don't know if he's going to be back considering he's 37 years old. If Ty Johnson gets a start for the Jets, he's worth a roll of the dice in a 12-team or 14-team league. He's got Seattle. Their defense hasn't been great against running backs. But I don't know if I trust Ty Johnson in the first week of the fantasy postseason. He's probably a guy that I'd add just for depth purposes if I needed help at running back. And then we mentioned Peyton Barber. J.D. McKissick, again, is probably gone, but if he's out there, I'd grab him too.
Wide receiver waiver wire needs. What are those?
Last week, I told you to pick up T.Y. Hilton. He had a big game. He owns Houston. And he's got the Raiders this week. He's had a 21% target share in his last two games. He's averaging over 21 points per game in that time. And Raiders, right? So T.Y. typically runs his routes out wide, but they also use him in the slot. And I think they'll use that mismatch because the Raiders are terrible against slot receivers. Kiki QT, another player we talked about last week, had a big game for Houston. 9 targets, 8 catches, 141 yards. He had a 24% target share. That's slightly more than Brandon Cooks had. Rashard Higgins, he had 9 targets, 6 catches, over 21 fantasy points last week. Again, he's got, much like Baker, he's got a bad matchup this week, but you could stash him and maybe play him against the Jets in week 16 if you reach that level, that Super Bowl week. Some other wide receivers to target, Gabriel Davis, as we talked about, Tim Patrick, as we talked about, Laviska Shenault, deeper leagues, Donovan Peoples-Jones, probably deeper leagues, Chad Hansen, also deeper leagues, because there's not a lot to like out there in competitive fantasy leagues on the waiver wire at this point. So those are a few players where if you've got a dead spot on your roster, and you're looking maybe for a player who could pop for you at some point during the playoffs, they're worth an add. Most likely not startable in most fantasy leagues at this point, though.
Last waiver wire thoughts. What are they?
Well, let's not forget the tight end position with Anthony Firkser and Logan Thomas being the two top options. Logan Thomas was good against Pittsburgh, boy. Mm-hmm. He's slowly risen to near tight end one level. And he was impressive against Pittsburgh. He really was. But tight end overall is not good. Gerald Everett, Dan Arnold, Tyler Eifert, Drew Sample, it's not all that great. One thing I would say, and I say this every week, and I don't know if people are listening out there or not. Hopefully they are. But I'm telling you, folks, I told you this a couple of weeks ago. Make sure you're handcuffing your top running back. I don't care who it – if you have Zeke, you should have Tony Pollard. If you have Dalvin Cook, you should have Alexander Mattison or Mike Boone, depending on Madison's status for this week. Like I said, if you have Josh Jacobs, you need Devontae Booker, and Booker's might be the starter again. He wasn't very good last week, but you got to make sure you handcuff those top backs, because if you lose a top runner in the next couple of weeks and you don't have that backup or depth at running back, then you're in trouble. And another thing too is I would suggest just don't get too cute right now. It's the fantasy playoffs. Use the dudes who got you there. Don't get too cute with the matchups. Like, I know it's fun to play the matchups, and you know, like, I gave you an example, like Kyler Murray hasn't been good the last couple of weeks, right? But unless I have like Justin Herbert or Ryan Tannehill, I mean, I got to play him. Yeah. Right? I got to play. Lamar has not been good this season. Unless I have, again, I use Tannehill and Herbert, I'm probably playing him. So don't get too cute with the matchups. Start the guys who got you there.
Great point. And you mentioned, I mean, Kyler Murray, and that got me thinking, has Kenyon Drake done enough to get your confidence back in him?
Yeah, he's been decent. I mean, this is like Drake season. Drake always does well in the second half of the season. It's odd, right? He drives you nuts in the first half. You hate the Drake, and now you love the Drake. So I'm back to loving the Drake. The matchup against the Giants is pretty decent. Their defense has been playing well, but running backs can beat them. So Drake's on the RB2 radar for sure this week. And what's going to be an interesting game, because both teams are in playoff contention.
Yeah, nice to see Drake back in that good stance. Love to see
it. That's right.
As always, thank you so much. It's Michael Fabiano. I'm Sandy Charles, and we'll see you next week.